Hello, this is Bruce Carroll and Nikki Carroll coming at you from Memphis, Tennessee, and this is Awaken Me to Memphis, and we are so glad that you decided to join us today. Awaken Me to is a program with real people telling real stories following a real God. And we are so blessed and excited today because we didn't even know that we were going to have an opportunity to hang with these two folks, friends. But God's amazing in how he orchestrates stuff. Jim and Ann Mills just happened to be in town. They live in Brussels, Belgium. Man, we are excited to talk to you guys and to allow you the opportunity to let people know what it is that God's called you into. Because you've got a strong ministry, and God is using you guys to change lives, and we are so glad that you have decided to join us here on Awaken Me Too.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you guys.
It's great to have both of you here today.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's super.
Okay, so we've been knowing you guys a while.
Yes.
And we don't see enough of you. You know, you sort of blaze into town,
yep.
And then you blaze out of town.
That's right.
But I want you to just take your liberty and tell everybody what it is that God's called you to do.
Yeah, I'm originally from Memphis. I actually am a Memphis boy, born and raised here. I left this city in 1972 to move to Dallas, Texas, because I was studying theology, and I was at seminary for a few years, and then met my wife there, and we married in the backyard in Duncanville, Texas in 1975. And then by the end of that first year, the Lord had given us a real clarity about where we were going.
Jim, how was it that you and Ann came to know Jesus in the first place, though, before that?
I'll give my end, and I'll let Ann give her story. You know, I'm from Memphis, as I said, and raised in a conservative evangelical church. But, and so, you know, I was, at 9 years old, I made some kind of profession of faith, but I didn't understand the gospel, really. You know, I went to church, but I wanted to know God somehow, and I didn't know how. And I think it was really my last semester at university where there was a little home group in my Baptist church that I was a part of, and there was a very marvelous guy there from Texas, and he just shared so freely. It was so natural. And I said, God, whatever's going on in that guy, that's what I want to know. I mean, there's a realness there, and I was looking for reality, and I was looking for the relevance of the gospel. I couldn't find it, it didn't seem. So when he shared, then that night, he said, anybody have a need? And I was an honest soul, so I raised my hand, and then he came over and prayed for me, and boom, God met me in a way that I'd never known before. And there wasn't any terminology at that point. It was just Jesus. But then God really spoke to me and led me down a path to get further education, theological education. And that's when I went out to Dallas. And that's where then I met my wife. And this is the early Jesus people days. And so I married Ann, but I'm going to let her tell her story a bit, get her background.
Yes, we'd like to hear that, Ann. How did you come to know Jesus?
Well, like so many in my day, was from a backslidden Baptist family. That means you only go to church maybe twice a year. And so took advantage of that. And by college, I was very deep into the occult. And went to school in South Louisiana, which is full of the occult. And I just felt like that was the supernatural that I was seeking. And, of course, I was on the wrong side of the fence. And I came to a point where I really recognized that there was a dark side of the supernatural, and there was a Jesus full of light side. And I just made that decision through, not going to tell a story, but that I wanted to cross over. I didn't want to be on that dark side anymore. And it was a black and white decision. And a lot of people just said, oh, you'll not last. That won't last for you. You know, you belong to the dark side. When my life changed, of course, you come from that darkness and you come into the light, You just want to serve the Lord. It doesn't matter what that means or how much that costs. It's everything to you. And that's why I ended up in missions, ended up with Jim, who was the one guy I knew. He is someone who will never forsake the Lord. So I married him. We went to Europe. 45 years later, here we are.
How did y'all meet?
In prison.
You were doing a prison ministry.
That's
you
right.
You got it.
We love to say in prison.
I knew that.
Yeah. We were working in teenagers in a maximum security unit who had actually committed crimes worthy of
crimes.
San Quentin, but they were under 18. Hmm. And so we would sing there. We started singing together. We were friends singing together and going to the prison with our church outreach program. And through that, our relationship developed. We began to write songs together. And all of a sudden, I just looked at her and I go, hey.
She's the one.
She's the one for me. And that's the story. That's the story of us.
That's awesome. Okay, so do you have children?
We do. We have one son born in 1981. He was born in Germany. He is 39 years old now. Got five children of his own, and that's sort of the reason we're part-time in the USA and part-time in Europe still.
Ah, because he lives over here.
He lives in Overland Park, Kansas.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so then obviously you guys are believers, you're in love, you're feeling called to the ministry. I mean, you're singing to troubled youth in prison.
Right.
And so God begins to define or call you to some sort of specific ministry.
Yeah.
And how did that work?
It was an organic thing, actually. What happened is I was a worship leader and songwriter. We sang in coffee houses in the early 70s.
I remember those.
You remember those days, yeah. And we loved that work. It was so unconventional, and we were unconventional type people. And then in my first year of my third year of seminary, actually, I heard Arthur Blessed speak. I don't know if anybody remembers him.
Yes.
Sure.
But amazing man of God. Came into this Southern Baptist seminary in the evangelism class. And he spoke, and I looked at him. He had jeans on, a little bit longer hair, wasn't wearing a tie. He was already my kind of guy in many ways. And I listened to him, and I just said, man, Lord, he's a fool for you. And so that's what I want to be. I don't know what you have for me, but I had a sense of destiny. And so I remember going back to my little efficiency apartment and praying and saying, God, I don't know what you want me to do, but I just give up. I'd already given my life up, but now I'm saying, just what do you want? But, you know, God in his providence, sometimes he takes you somewhere when you know nothing about him, and then he'll bring you back. I don't think I would have ever thought about Europe had I not been there, to be quite honest.
Well, so has he given you a love in your heart for those people?
We were interceding in a little small prayer group, and God touched my heart and our hearts together deeply for a group in Germany. I said, Lord, why do you have us here? I mean, it's right that we're here. We know you brought us here. It's a miracle that we're here. But why do you have us here? And then as I started to pray that Sunday, I was fasting 3 days, and boom, God broke my heart over a people group. They happened to be the Catholic Church.
Wow. Mm.
And I was raised in Memphis, okay?
Right.
A Baptist.
Right.
That was not my group of people. But, you know, when God touches your heart deeply for a people, everything flies out the window.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, we went to Mass for 7 years, not because we were wanting to become necessarily Catholics, but we wanted to know them, we wanted to understand them, and we wanted to serve them. And so that type of experience, you know, taking me out of my world, bringing me to a place I never could have gone outside of being introduced to his heart for a people, began to prepare us for all the other things he was, had for us that we didn't know. And it really not about something, it's not about us, it's something he was doing, and we were allowed to take part in that, you know, loving this people. And then that laid the tracks for our work in the arts. And that's where it went after that.
What do you attribute most to this extraordinary change since the day you gave your life to God and this ministry? Anne?
If I could move years down the road now, surprisingly, a few years ago, the Lord moved us out of that Central Europe and gave us a mission down in the Balkans. That was a total surprise for us, a door that God opened that we couldn't have opened. And we found ourselves in Kosovo, of all places, running an arts camp for teenagers. Wow. Now, we sort of knew how to run arts camps because we've done that in Finland and in Germany and Switzerland and Austria. So we knew how to do that. So we took our artist and we went down to run this camp. And there is about 1,500 evangelical Christians in Kosovo. And we thought, we're going to do this for the Christian kids because they don't have anything down here. Everybody was excited about it. We set it up on the opening day. Loads of kids came to register. And guess what? It was over 50% Muslim.
Wow. What
an opportunity. They had seen the posters and got the advertisement, and instead of all these, there were more than half of them that turned up that were Muslim. And it was like, oh boy, now what do we do? You know, it was like, this is exciting, but we can't have our normal worship sessions. You've got the Muslim culture. How do we meet them? How do we love them? And the second year we did that, we had 80% Muslim kids that came.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so it was, and they weren't afraid of art. They didn't have the opportunity to learn art forms or to train in Kosovo, which is a 98% Muslim country. So it was amazing. And this is the amazing thing about what happens when we have the heart of God, is that when they begin to paint and dance and sing with these, we have artists who are Christians that come in and lead these workshops, the things that they could not say came out in their art. Because
wow.
They had been through that war with Milosevic,
1999,
where the Christians, so-called Christians, came and killed, slaughtered their families and carved crosses in their baby brothers.
Wow.
And so we're going to say, oh, let me tell you about the cross.
Right.
No. These are people that had been persecuted from a so-called Christian country. Now, we know they're Christian in maybe culture, but not in relationship. But when they began to do art, what came out was their pain and their experiences. And there was so much healing and just, it wasn't about just preaching the gospel. It was about loving on them with God's love, which is the gospel. And we had amazing experiences through that. But, you know, how did we end up in Kosovo? How did these Muslim kids end up at this camp? And there they were, and we realized the teenagers we had in front of us were the little kids, 5, 6, 7, 8, that went through that war and hid in the forest.
Whose aunts and uncles had been shot in the field, and their little
Amazing.
Brothers had been executed, and their sisters raped. It's not saying, I'm not trying to beat up Serbia at that point. I'm just saying this was their story.
Yeah. Yes.
And they were hurting. And if we had come to them, we came to them as servants. And that's what one of the leading Muslims came to me at the end. She said, thank you for coming and serving us with this. I've never experienced anything like this. And I told her, I said, well, ask her name. And she told me her name. And I had an impression from the Lord for her. I said, can I say something to you? She goes, yes. I said, can I say that I'm going to pray for you? And she said, yes, thank you. And she said, please do pray for me. Now, she was a very devout Muslim. And we had found out that there's a teacher in the school where we were doing this event who had given Bibles to some of the Muslim students. And she comes along and takes away the Bibles from all the students. This was her mission, to keep everybody Muslim. As a matter of fact, it was against the law to proselytize in the country. If you went intentionally to share the gospel with someone, you wouldn't suffer the consequences so much, but if they found out, that person would then be interned and suffer consequences. We get back to the story. So and her name is Anita, precious Anita, a good friend, love her today. And I just said, can I pray for you? She said, yes, yes. And I said, can I tell you what I'm going to pray for you? She said, yes. I said, I'm going to pray wisdom for you. And she said, well, thank you, thank you. And I said, because I have an impression that you want to work in politics. She goes, why, yes, that's exactly what I want to do. And I said, well, that's wonderful. I said, you need wisdom. And she said, thank you. Please pray for wisdom for me. Hmm. And then I went one further. I said, can I define wisdom for you? I was really stepping out on the limb. She said, yes, please define it. I said, well, wisdom means a hearing heart. That's what Solomon prayed. He said, God, give me a hearing heart in Hebrew. And she said, that's what I want. And I said, well, Anita, that's what I'm going to pray for you, that you have a hearing heart. So this is how we reach into the world, from Catholics to Muslims and then to artists all over. That's sort of been our journey, is reaching people that we never normally would have reached and moving in their world. And I see it like John 4, you know the story in John 4 where Jesus led the disciples into Samaria, which was unholy land for the
right.
Jewish people.
Yeah.
But he led them right in and then stopped, and he had to send them all away to get lunch because they weren't going to be able to handle what he was going to do,
right.
Talking to a woman.
Right.
And so there he was, but he wants to take us to new places.
Yeah.
And if you have a heart, and one of the transformations I think he wants to create in us, and what he's done with Ann and I, is brought us a place we could never go, because he loves people.
Yes, he does. And his love for people, his passion for people, crosses denominational lines.
Absolutely.
Crosses cultural lines.
Exactly.
And he is looking for tender-hearted people that are completely sold out, that will go wherever he asks them to go.
It's not like God just has a plan for me. God has plans, and he loves people, and he's just looking to and fro and finding hearts. He says, do you want to be involved with me? I'm going to take you to a new place. It may be even here in Memphis.
Right.
You know,
and I was going to make that point. You know, I mean, this is a powerful ministry that you guys have and have had for many, many years outside of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everybody's not called to that.
That's right.
That is a very specific assignment, but it is no more or less important.
Absolutely.
As those that are called to Nutbush.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that's been one of our main messages. And when I'm speaking and teaching in different situations, I say, God may call you all the way here.
Right.
And you're from here. But he'll still introduce you to the here that you don't really see.
Right.
Because we're here and we walk past things every day and people, and we don't even see them.
Right.
You know, we put everybody in boxes, and then God wants to birth us into a place with new eyes to see people right here.
We encourage people in this direction. There's a difference in saying, God, what do you want to do with my life? And saying, God, what are you doing and how can I be a part of it? That's really different. And I think there's a lot of frustration involved in, God, what do you want to do with my life? What is my ministry? Instead of saying, God, what are you doing in Belgium?
Exactly.
I'm here. How can I be a part of what you are doing?
Yeah, we aren't inviting God to come up alongside of our ministry.
Right.
We are inviting God to please allow us to come up alongside of what he's doing.
Exactly.
And we're sold out, and we want to be used of you, and we have a passion that you have birthed in our heart for these people in the arts.
Everything that you have done leading up to this, every purpose, every plan that God has brought you through, has equipped you with your further ministry of planting seeds in people that are so tough.
It amazes me, honestly, Nikki. What you just said reminds me of something that has to do with the arts, and it's sort of a segue into talking about that. A friend of mine got into a taxi cab once, and he was wanting to share the gospel with this taxi cab driver. And he heard clearly in his heart, had the impression, do not say but this. Only say this. And so he said, oh, okay, Lord, he felt like he needed to obey. So I only shared that little tidbit, and he left it. And it was a short ride anyway, and he got out and he went on. But he said, you know, as I pondered that, I asked the Lord, I said, Lord, why did you only want me to share that? He said, because you are only part of the play of someone's life. He said, if you try to do the whole play all the time, you can sometimes shortcut something that I'm doing. So if you just cooperate, you know, just cooperate with me, follow my lead. And so he saw it. I see God as a prompter in a play, and they were moving into our performance, getting ready to go out on the stage. And you get your lines, you go out with your lines and you give them. And he says, that's it. That's all you're to say. Come on back. Not that we want to be superficial or leave people hanging.
Sure.
But God really does love people, and he has a story he's weaving into their world.
Right, and you're going to deliver those lines to the best of your ability.
To the best of our ability.
Skillfully and with passion because God gave them to you.
Why the arts? First of all, the reason I got into it is because I was a fierce defender of preaching the gospel, and I believed that was only with my lips. You know, you had to preach the gospel. And then God showed me that through a number of things, and I can't go into the whole story, that disseminating his truth, beauty, and goodness doesn't always just involve your lips. It's as much your character, the way you look at life, and the way you connect with people. And then you disseminate something of his reality to them. And the arts came into picture when I read an article one time called The Arts and the Church. And I said, the arts and the church? I said, what's the arts got to do with anything? And I was a worship leader. I read that article and I said, the arts are an absolute distraction. That's where I was at. And then I kept on reading this article. It was an interview with a man named Joseph Garlington. I don't know if anybody knows who that is, but he was a man back in the 70s. And the question was to a man named Dr. Francis Schaeffer.
Sure, Frankie Schaeffer.
And he said, Dr. Schaeffer, what's it going to take for the church to wake up to the significance of the arts? And I said, yeah, that's a good question, because the arts are ridiculous. I mean, it's a distraction. You know, we just need the Holy Spirit and listening and go out there and love people. And he said, and Dr. Schaeffer's answer stunned me. He said, well, when people take the Bible seriously. And I go, man, I take the Bible very seriously. I carried my Bible with me. I read it so much, looked like I beat people up with it. You know, it was really, it had black and blue and yellow colors in it. And I said, that's ridiculous. I mean, I take the Bible seriously. But then he didn't say it in that article, but I found out that 75% of the Bible is narrative and poetry and all kinds of creative expressions. And only 10% ultimately is didactic. And I go, whoa, that's amazing. And then he said something else. And he said, so what's it going to take for the church to wake up to the value of the arts in the purposes of God? And he said, when we realize that Jesus is Lord of the whole of life and not just our religious activities.
Yes.
And I go, I had a renaissance. And it was through that experience, Anne already believed in, she was very creative and already had a vision for the arts, but I was the leader, I was the worship leader, I had no vision till that point.
Wow, that's awesome.
And at that point, everything changed. And then the other thing is, Bruce and Dickie, the interesting thing is, God brought people across our paths on his own providential initiative. Conductors, dancers.
I was going to say, I bet they were artists.
They were artists.
Everywhere.
We sit down on a train next to an artist. I sit on a plane next to an artist, a painter. I sit next to a composer. And I had an immediate rapport with them because I knew God was the designer of all this. And that God celebrates his design and wants us to celebrate his design.
Right.
We immediately found common ground. And it wasn't a trick. It wasn't manipulation. It was genuine.
Jim, Ann, thank you so much for being here. You are such a blessing. And yes, I will say amen to the fact that God is into the arts. God is the creator of the universe. And in fact, Romans 1:20 says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. All we have to do is look at God's creation, because it cries out to the existence of our loving God. And if God can do all that, he can certainly give anybody hope. So anyone listening, you're out of hope, you need hope, remember this: as long as Jesus lives, there is hope. Thank you for joining us today. God bless all of you on Awaken Me Too. Bye-bye.
There is
this is a Valley of the Whale production.